Jimmy's head, and I judged that we had maybe 5 minutes for whatever it was that had brought us apart from everyone else.
"I'm glad you're not a complete jerk," Charlotte said.
She had slipped her phone out of the pocket of my sweatshirt and was texting. Thanks, I guess.
I didn't mean it like that.
Charlotte looked up from her phone with a guilty smile. Her hair streamed behind her in the breeze, and the bridge of her nose had turned pink from the sun.
Sorry, Jill wanted to know where I'd put her sunscreen. Anyway, I just meant how we're, like, destined to date each other. The most popular girl in the junior class and the most popular guy.
I'm not the most popular guy in our year, I protested, dropping my gaze to the tide pools.
Duh. Of course you are. Why else would I have brought you here?
You brought me here? I raised an eyebrow, teasing her.
Yes, I did. Now shut up and kiss me.
I shut up and kissed her. She tasted like strawberry lip gloss and diet soda, and she smelled like suntan lotion and my mom's favorite detergent, and we were 16 and not fully dressed, even as far as the beach is concerned.
So?
Charlotte asked with a sly smile when we pulled apart. You should keep my sweatshirt, I said. It looks nice on you.
Ezra!
Charlotte chastised. She put her hand on her hip, waiting. Would you like to go out with me?
Of course.
She grinned triumphantly and kissed me again, her hands warm and soft on my back.
You're so cute. We should take you shopping. I bet you'd look super hot in some new jeans.
So there it is, the day it happened, a romantic tale filled with beers consumed in a public urinal, getting creamed at volleyball by varsity water polo, kissing a girl in the tide pools, and not knowing what I was getting myself into. Back in ninth grade science, we had a unit on ecology, and I'd read Steinbeck's Sea of Cortez for extra credit after failing to impress Mr. Gesch with my tenuous understanding of the water cycle. Steinbeck wrote about tide pools and how profoundly they illustrate the interconnectedness of all things, folded together in an ever-expanding universe that's bound by the elastic string of time. He said that one should look from the tide pool to the stars and then back again in wonder. And maybe things would have been different if I'd heeded his advice that day on the beach with Charlotte. But I didn't. Instead, I linked my hand in hers and failed to appreciate the bigger picture, and the only stars I saw were wearing varsity jackets. 10. You can always tell when it's Friday. There's an excitement specific to Fridays, coupled with relief that another week has passed. Even Toby's friends, who I didn't think ever did much over the weekend, were in a good mood that first Friday. Luke, Austin, and Phoebe were already there when I got to the table during break. Luke had his arm around Phoebe, who was eating a Pop-Tart, and Austin was engrossed in some mobile gaming device.
"No, no, bad portal,"
he scolded, totally oblivious to the world.
"Stop, evil, urgh, suck my flagellated balls, douche nozzle."
Phoebe sighed.
"Help, help, Austin, your flagellated balls are on fire."
Austin didn't even look up.
"Told you he was in the gaming zone," Phoebe said.
"What did I miss?" I asked, sliding onto a bench.
"Well,
I heard Jimmy's having a sick kegger tonight," Luke said in this sarcastic way that let me know he still wasn't all that thrilled to have me around. "It's a tier one party, of course."
"Yeah, I heard that too," I said. not liking the way Luke had casually thrown around the term my old friends used to express the exclusivity of their little events. It's like Animal Farm.
You mean Animal House, Luke corrected. The movie about college frat parties.
I shook my head. No, I mean Animal Farm, you know. Some animals are more equal than other animals? Phoebe laughed and squirmed out from under Luke's arm to throw away her Pop-Tart wrapper.
Ezra, you're taking me to Jimmy's party, right?
She asked, fake pouting. Definitely, I said, playing along. Should we bring a bottle of wine or an assortment of cheeses as a host gift? Luke broke off a piece of Phoebe's Pop-Tart and she squealed in protest, ignoring my question.
What up, minions?
Toby slid a preposterously large coffee thermos onto the table.
Oh, is that Mortal Portal 3?
Austin still didn't look up.
He's in the zone,
Phoebe said.
Honestly, what is it with
boys in video games? No wonder print is dead.
I read,
Toby protested as Sam and Cassidy joined us, eating fresh cookies from the bakery line.
For instance, last night I read that you can levitate a frog with magnets.
Phoebe rolled her eyes, unimpressed.
Hypothetically or scientifically proven?
Cassidy wanted to know.
Scientifically proven,
Toby said triumphantly.
These Nobel Prize-winning scientists did it.
How many beers do y'all think it takes before one internationally respected scientist
turns to another and says, "Dude, bet you $20 I can levitate a frog with a magnet,"
Sam drawled.
Well, which magnetic charge?
Cassidy asked.
I mean, it has to be either positive or negative, doesn't it?
You think you're so clever, don't you?
Toby teased.
Just a tadpole,
Cassidy replied. Everyone groaned. And then the bell rang. Cassidy and I had English together, with Luke actually. But he usually walked Phoebe to class. So, I said as Cassidy and I headed toward Mr. Moreno's room, I didn't see any secret messages last night.
I didn't want to be predictable,
Cassidy retorted.
But at least now I know you're paying attention.
Good old Moreno and his pop quizzes. I'd nearly forgotten about those. He slammed the tough one on us. Themes and metaphors from the first 100 pages of Gatsby. I was slogging my way through the questions on the smart board when it hit me how the billboard that Wilson thought was watching him, the one with the eyes of Dr. T.J. Eckelberg, wasn't so different from the idea behind the Panopticon. I scribbled my revelation down as my final long answer question and finished just before Mr. Moreno called time. He made us trade papers with the person sitting behind us, which, lucky me, was Luke. Luke grinned as I tore my page out of my notebook and handed it over.
"Hope you studied, Faulkner,"
he said, uncapping his pen. I got Anamika Patel's paper. At the top of it, she'd written her name, the date, our teacher's name, our class period, and Gatsby Quiz Number 1, in the neatest handwriting I'd ever seen. Mr. Moreno went over the short answer questions and the true-false. Anamika missed one of the true-false. All right, hand them back and then pass them forward. I'll grade the long answer questions myself, Mr. Moreno said. I passed Anamika's quiz forward, and she scowled at me, as though it was my fault she hadn't gotten a score as perfect as her handwriting. Hey, Luke? I asked. Can I have my quiz back? Nice essay, Faulkner, he said, leaning back in his chair, still holding my paper. Which version of Cliff's notes did you use? I didn't know there were different versions, I said. Which one do you recommend? Luke muttered something under his breath and passed back my quiz. There was a piece of computer paper beneath it, folded in thirds. I was about to mention it, but Luke shook his head slightly in warning, so I slipped the piece of paper into my bag and passed my quiz to the front. Ms. Wang wants to see both of you, said Toby when Cassidy and I arrived at the lunch table with our mini pizzas. By the way, that means now? I crammed a slice of mini pizza into my mouth and indicated that I was good to go.
Great. Now when he does eat, it's disgusting,
Phoebe noted. Cassidy sighed and sat down.
I'm going to pretend I didn't get that message until the very end of lunch. How about you, Ezra?
I swallowed thickly. What message?
Good boy.
Cassidy put on her sunglasses and nibbled her way through half of her pizza before getting up. Are you seriously not finishing that? I asked.
Why?
Cassidy grinned, dangling the pizza half over a trash can.
Do you want it?
I want it. Austin said, finally glancing up from his game console. Well, I'm broke. I spent all my money on MP3.
I knew that's what you were playing, Toby said. Dude, what level are you? Is it true the eyes regenerate twice as fast if you infinity drop them? Let's go.
Cassidy said with a sigh, and I followed her to Ms. Wang's classroom. Ms. Wang was eating last night's leftover spaghetti out of a plastic container at her desk and reading a celebrity gossip magazine. I'm not going to lie. It was pretty sad.
You wanted to see us?
I asked. She startled and guiltily slid an attendance folder over the magazine. I pretended not to notice.
Yes, our two new recruits. I'm so happy to have both of you on the team.
Suddenly, I remembered that sign-up sheet the first day of class and how I'd put Cassidy's name down. I was screwed. I glanced at Cassidy, and her expression was a mixture of shock and horror.
About that?
I began. I don't think... But Ms. Wang wasn't listening. She rambled on about how wonderful it was to have a seasoned pro like Cassidy, and how she was sure Cassidy or Toby could answer any questions I might have about competing. Cassidy's face had gone gray.
"Miss Wang," she finally said, "I think there's a mistake. I didn't sign up." "Oh, I've already registered both of you for the San Diego Open tournament in 2 weeks,"
Ms. Wang said, misunderstanding.
"And I've reserved a school van to drive everyone down for the weekend, unless either of you have any, special needs you'd like to discuss privately."
"Nope," I said through clenched teeth. "No special needs." I made the phrase sound good and dirty, and Cassidy shot me a look of sympathy.
"I'm so glad,"
Ms. Wang said, handing us each a thick packet. "Now, you'll need to have these permission forms signed by a parent or guardian."
"My parents are out of town," Cassidy said. "Yeah, they're in Switzerland at this medical symposium for the rest of the month."
I was pretty sure Cassidy's parents were at no such thing, but Ms. Wang just smiled and assured Cassidy that her old coach could fax over last year's form for the time being. There was such a finality to her tone that we didn't dare to question it. Cassidy and I slunk from Ms. Wang's room in defeat. The moment the door closed, Cassidy turned toward me, eyes blazing.
"What the hell?"
she demanded.
"She cornered us back there, and I never signed up to compete. It's like she was planning this all along. I knew there was a reason I got put in debate class." "Oh, there aren't any other team electives open," my advisor said. "It's this or phys ed." "Yeah, freaking right. I'm not some champion pony they can parade around whenever they feel like it. I don't compete anymore, and they have no right to force me into it like this."
I said.
"And you didn't sign up for it either."
Cassidy jabbed a finger at my chest.
"You should have seen your face when Ms. Wang asked if you had any special needs. I wish you'd punched her."
"Yeah, that would have been productive." Cassidy sighed.
"God, Ezra, you really don't get it. Our names are already entered. We compete or forfeit on the tournament listing."
Crap. I wasn't familiar with the rules of debate competitions, and I hadn't realized the only way out was to forfeit publicly.
Cassidy?
I had to tell her. Remember that day in class with the sign-up sheet and how you were laughing at me?
Yeah.
I sort of signed you up as a joke, I admitted.
You what?
I didn't know, I quickly amended. You'd pulled that stupid stunt on me in Spanish, and then Toby had signed me up, so I just figured...
You just figured what exactly?
Cassidy said coldly.
That it would be funny?
I guess. I didn't know you felt like that about debate. I didn't know that you'd stopped competing. I hung my head, waiting for Cassidy to laugh and say that it was okay. But she didn't.
That's right,
Cassidy said fiercely.
I stopped competing, just like how you stopped competing in tennis. But you know what? I get that you don't want to talk about it. Just because I don't limp around with a freaking cane doesn't mean I have to explain myself to people I've known for 5 seconds for quitting. So screw you for signing me up for this because you thought it would be funny.
Her eyes burned with revulsion as she stomped past me, and I didn't blame her. I felt awful, like I should go back into Ms. Wang's office and explain everything. But then the bell rang, and I realized I was going to be late for Spanish. 11. By that evening, my weekend was shaping up to be pretty lousy. I'd come straight home from school and spent the day alternating between doing the key terms for Coach Anthony's class and playing Zombie Guitar God on mute to keep my mind off how badly I'd screwed things up with Cassidy. But it wasn't working. Worse, I could tell that my mom kept coming to check on me, hovering just outside my bedroom door and listening. Cooper, who was curled on a bathrobe at the foot of my bed, would glance at the door and then sigh, settling back into his nest. "Well, it is Friday night, old sport," his eyes seemed to say, "and there's a whole world out there." Cooper was right. Maybe I should go to Jimmy's backyard kegger. I briefly considered it before remembering what happened the last time I went to a house party. So, yeah, that was definitely out. And then the little Skype icon on my computer screen dinged. It was Toby, and did I want to come over? I changed out of my pajamas, grabbed my keys, and practically opened my bedroom door into my mom's face.
"Oh, you're up,"
she said. Well, yeah, it's 9 o'clock. I'm going out.
Where are you going?
She called after me.
I need to know where you're going.
Why? I asked, mildly curious as to when this had become a new house rule. She spluttered over that one for a good 10 seconds.
Look, I'm going to Toby's.